It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have coming off, hopefully, you had a great weekend getting stuff done off your checklist, getting set for the holidays as things go back to normal. Although in New York, I was just stunned to see one of those headlines said, New Yorkers back in masks, and you realize it's just an advisory. It's up to you. But there's evidently a triple-demic going on. You get RV, or it's the flu, or just the old-fashioned COVID-19, our fourth variant in. A lot of people getting sick, but hopefully you're persevering through it. No one's going to panic and change our lives like we did for a couple of years. Meanwhile, coming up this hour, Congressman-elect Dr. Rich McCormick, his life's going to be changed. He is now going to be going into Congress for the first time in Georgia. We're also going to be joined by John Levine. John is a New York Post writer at the forefront of a lot of this Hunter Biden story. You're not going to believe his new tactic when it comes to pushing back against the ensuing investigation. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You know, there's some concern that if you engage in this kind of trade, deeply asymmetrical trade, does it put other Americans in harm's way in the future?
Right. Preet Bharara. He's the one who put Victor Boot behind bars. And the blowback days after the Merchant of Death was swapped for 32-year-old WNBA center Brittany Griner is pervasive, widespread, and dare I say, this could all blow back on Biden.
Number two.
The system is overwhelmed right now with the rescission of Title 42 authorities without being able to expel people back. It's just incredible the dereliction of this administration in putting us all at risk.
Ron Video, not waiting for December 12th. The border invasion heats up as Title 42 goes away and acceptance, not expulsion, becomes the law of the land. It's creating a disaster on our border right now like we've never seen before. We'll discuss.
Number one.
In looking at the Twitter files, I did look and see in Matt Taibbi's Substack where he said that there were weekly meetings between the FBI and DHS and Twitter. I certainly hope that that was part of the National Security Council approved process.
I highly doubt it, John Radcliffe, who was at the DNI running things when all this was going on. Twitter files part four, links to an intel agency emergence and left-wing bias on COVID and Hunter are more clear. What we know and why the media isn't bothering to even report it, but we will. So let's begin. First off, a fourth batch over the last 10 days has been released thanks to Elon Musk, who is out and about and already talking about free speech, and I think he's done a tremendous job. What I find absolutely stunning, as I mentioned on Friday, and I think on Thursday, is that nobody's picking this up. This is huge news. Now, I thought they'd roll out some commentators and columnists who say it's no big deal. But when you find out that Michelle Obama was contacting Twitter to make sure that Donald Trump was suspended after January 6th, what's he doing? When you find out that this head of business practices is meeting weekly with the FBI, what are you doing? Are you a private company? And then when it comes to COVID-19, they're all over it, squelching or banning people who might have a medical message over an evolving pandemic we still don't know the origins of that may counter what Anthony Fauci wants. I hope that bothers you. Now, Michael Snellenberger is in the middle of it. He did a whole thing today or yesterday over the whole removal of Donald Trump, what went into it. But as much as people are focused on January 6th and saying whether he deserved it or not, you should not be marginalizing the tweets of a president of the United States and eventually eliminating it. You had other leaders come out and say that, too. The question is, what did Dorsey know? And why would he tell Elon Musk to buy Twitter if he knew he was so susceptible? What is going on? What was going on beneath him that he probably didn't know about? So now the administration, the only place they even get any questions is from Fox, Now the administration is scrambling to explain this away. But no one's really pressing him that hard. And I don't think that Drew Barrymore is really going to press the president on this today. Just have a hunch, just judging by her past interviews about makeup in Hollywood when she was famous in the 80s. Here is Daryl Issa on Next Revolution last night from what we know so far. Cut five.
What Elon Musk is doing is very brilliantly insulating Twitter from what is likely to be investigations and even charges against the other companies. He took over and he's saying, look, these are individuals. This does not represent the company I bought and paid for. But when you look at Facebook, when you look at Google, boy, to quote an old comedy of Lucille Ball, you got some splaining to do at those other agencies. Those companies are not explaining. And as a result, it'll be lawsuits, both civil and criminal investigations by Congress that are going to be asking them tough questions. Well, quite frankly, we're getting the answers before we asked from Twitter.
And they're coming out by the day, and it's easy to get them confused. And the one thing that they're doing is they're commenting on in the middle of these tweets. They're giving their commentary of these reporters, Barry Weiss, Matt Taibbi, and now Michael Schnellenberger. And I get it. You want to do it, but I find it. I really got to go back and say, wait a second, what did they say, and what is actually a reprint of what they picked up on Slack or what they've been tweeted out to each other or interoffice communications? So it's important. The other thing I wanted to bring up this hour and take your calls right after this hour, not only that, but this segment, is the Hunter Biden story. This is stunning. I had to read it twice. The Washington Post has a story that they have sources that show that Hunter Biden knows he's going to be the subject of investigation, so he wants to get on the offense, no joke. He wants to go after Bob Alinsky. He wants to go after any host that defames him, he says defame. Other people think reporting your horrible drug-addled actions, irresponsible use of a gun, and pictures with hookers, and talk about his international business deals. He's also going to go after the computer shop owner. There's a theory to be aggressive. Now, the White House has a different theory. Keep your head down. Don't worry about it. But Hunter Biden went right up to Kevin McCarthy at that big French dinner party and said hello, all bold. And they thought, what's that about? Because Kevin McCarthy was there with his wife or his mother. So you're not going to really engage then. And number two, Hunter Biden is out and about going through the White House a lot, trying to do something a little bit more visible, bringing his son out there. No one ever brings up the other son he has by the hooker. Down south, no one even acknowledges that. Didn't make the family photo. So we're going to come back and talk to Congressman-elect Rich McCormick about that and also what they plan on achieving in Georgia. People want to say that Georgia's no longer red, but outside the special election, looks pretty red to me. Then John Levine will expand on what I just discussed with these tweets is now exposed with Twitter. I don't know about you. I think I keep you updated just so you know. I've added 92,000 followers since Musk took over. Originally, I got hit another quick 25, lost most. Then when he finally got it, I mean, I'm just adding the way I used to add prior to maybe 2018. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you, and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
Hey, folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie, formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you, it's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area. So you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? From finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience, Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
He's so busy,
he'll make your head spin.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. With me right now in studio, you're watching him on Fox Nation, a very happy guy and very qualified to get started, Congressman-elect Dr. Rich McCormick. He is in the 6th District of Georgia. Spent a lot of his time as a decorated Marine helicopter pilot, spent more than 20 years in the Marine Corps and Navy, also an emergency room doctor, and now you're going to add something else to your resume. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's get this on.
So what does it mean to you to get this? I mean, you're not somebody without accomplishments, but you seem really fired up to do this.
It's very humbling because I realize I'm taking part in history, that there's fewer people elected to Congress than have ever been in the NFL. And that's historical. We are going to make some big decisions on how we budget the future of America. I think there's some things that we have to get under control very quickly if we're going to survive as a nation that thrives and gives the same opportunities we always have historically. This debt crisis, which it is a crisis, which we keep talking about but not doing anything about, is going to be the biggest expense in government pretty soon. And once that happens, we're done.
Right. So you want to tackle that. But what service, with your military background, you want to get on armed services?
I think that'd be a great fit for me. I served with the Marine Corps for over 16 years, the Navy for over 4 years, spent some time attached to Army forces, foreign forces. Mm-hmm. From an Air Force family, it's something of great interest to me. I have two sons that want to be Marines. This is very near and dear to my heart. And I see what they're doing to the military. Very
What's
concerned.
Going on there?
Well, think about this. This
well, the vax mandate's got – I mean, it's right now it is just punishing.
So luckily with the new NDAA that they just voted on, they are getting rid of that. But that didn't
but
bring
the president
back,
can veto that, right?
That's true. And the Senate has to confirm it too. But the other problem is that we're not allowing people back in who are already kicked out. And we already have a 40% decline in recruiting, which is pretty concerning to anybody who has to deploy because that means you have to deploy more, which affects morale, which makes more people get out. So we're in this cycle that is really unsustainable for the military. If we're going to be a leading nation in the world, we need to reverse that very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, they're kicking out between 8 and 12,000. It's also affecting the academies, which are the best of the best. It's just crazy. Did you sense at all, do you hear from people that are still in this woke mentality?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have two friends of mine who were MARSOC battalion commanders. It's kind of like the best job you can possibly have. It's our version of Special Forces in the Marine Corps. One of mine was in a Bible study with when I was a junior officer, another guy I played rugby with. And these guys are the best of the best. And one of the things that they noticed is there is actually a change in the mentality of the officer corps, which is really surprising. Traditionally, we are the last bastion. We're the last meritocracy in the world, where literally it doesn't matter what you look like, where you came from.
Yeah.
You don't have to have any money. It doesn't matter what color you are, what race or religion. You achieve things based on how well you perform. And they're getting rid of this. They're starting to go to this mentality that they're teaching in colleges all across the United States and even the military academies now, that it's about awokeness, about
equity.
Yes. And that's harmful. And to see officers reflect that nature really should be concerning to everybody, because if we don't have the Marines or anybody in the military standing for what's right, what made America great, then where are we going? Because that's supposed to be the last bastion of meritocracy.
So what is your view on the Ukraine war?
I think that we do need to honor our treaties, treaties that honor the fact that they gave up their nuclear arms and that we have an obligation to help them against a very bad player who's an evil man, in my opinion. How we do it is what we're really debating, in my opinion. I think it's good to supply them with arms, but we need to resupply our arms. We need to make sure we have a strict accountability. I've been briefed on this quite a bit. I'm looking forward to having some more.
Yeah, I mean, accountability, I'm all for. I actually just want to give them the weapons they need to be successful.
Yes.
We have to stop this. You fight wars. But just from the outsider perspective, I could imagine being on the front lines of Ukraine, watching your infrastructure blow up and knowing that we have the missile defense to knock this stuff down, and we're not doing it. Also, the Israelis. The Israelis got to come around. Iran is taking Russia's side. That's got to bother the Israelis, who are afraid of aggravating Russia. I mean, there's some influence you could have there.
I would say, too, one thing is Russia is not in as good a position as a lot of people think they are. They are losing this war.
They are.
And I think they're losing the world prestige. What worries me—
They're fighting like it's World War II.
Exactly. And look at how they've been poor performing in past wars. They lined up with Iraqi-type tactics. If we had A-10s involved in that war, it would have been over before it began.
Exactly, and we could have been able to give them them, but I guess we didn't. We were slow walking the whole thing, all in or all out.
Well, and here's how where Biden made his mistake. He initially gave an out for the Ukrainian leadership to come to the United States and desert. He was still playing the Afghan card, where he said, "This is going to collapse. We're going to lose. I'm not going to invest early," and that's what put us in this predicament.
Well, you know what's kind of interesting is that is also our intelligence. It said they were going to fall in a matter of a week. Lucky to last a few days. Gahani was going to be secure. He was never going to leave that. They were going to have a coalition government. He was gone before they even got to Kabul. Our intelligence is not that great on the ground. And so is the rest of the world. And by the way, Vladimir Putin thought he was going to be into Kyiv and out real quick.
Doesn't that show everything you just mentioned, three nations, basically, Ukraine, Russia, and Afghanistan, leadership. Leadership matters. That's why the presidency of the United States matters. Leadership sets the bar for everything that happens downwind, whether you win wars or lose wars, whether you're successful economically or anything else.
So with Georgia, people going, well, Herschel Walker lost it, and Warnock won again. Ossoff is Democrat. It shows that Georgia has changed. It's no longer a red state. But if you look at the elections, it drills down local and national and see what Kemp did and you did. What do you think the story is?
I think this is first of all, I'll bet you that Kemp's not done in politics after being governor. I think we're going to win the Ossoff seat in 4 years. I think we're going to win back the Warnock seat in 6 years. I really do. I think that Georgia is red. I think if you look at our election specifically, myself and Kemp both outperformed Herschel by about 10 points, 10 to 11 points. That's significant. Now, some of that's just because of the tremendous amount of money they brought against Herschel. Some of the stuff that he admitted
88% of all the stories written on Herschel Walker were negative. 88%.
Of course. Yep. And that's politics. And unfortunately, we kind of played into that. Now, I love Herschel. I think he would have voted right. I think he is a good man. I think he would have been great for the Senate. We needed him in the Senate. Unfortunately, some of the things he's had in the past just didn't play well in that media war.
Also, not getting out in front of some of this stuff on the abortion, especially. And you could just say, I've had early in my life made this mistake, and that's why I came to this, this conclusion. I think President Trump said that. What about you personally? Do you see if this goes as well as you want it to go? Do you see yourself staying in politics, maybe going for that Senate seat, governor?
Yeah, I really want to try to focus on each day at a time. I think it reeks of ambition, and I think that's something we all have to guard ourselves. It's very easy in politics to think that you're the greatest thing. I think about half the people in politics think they're the next president of the United States. It's a very dangerous mindset. I think we have to think of ourselves as servants, as somebody who is supposed to be empowering people, not government. And a lot of times when you get intoxicated by politics, you think it's about you. It's not about me.
Right. We're actually talking to Congressman-elect Dr. Rich McCormick now at Georgia. We've got one more minute here. And I just want Mike Pompeo, you hear what Mike Pompeo said about the trade when you have the merchant of death for Brittany Griner. Cut 22.
The Trump administration was always very clear. We weren't going to trade bad guys for celebrities because it creates the wrong incentives for the bad guys as we go forward. It's not good for American national security. It's not good for people who are traveling across the world. but we shouldn't be engaged in the hostage taking that we see take place around the world. We're a nation of laws. We're a nation that the Constitution governs. This matters. When we get it right, we'll not only have the moral high ground, but we'll keep more American people safe as well.
And that's just it. You got to look down the road. What did we cause by showing that you can get a notorious arms dealer out for Russian veteran, Soviet veteran, back out and 55 years old, he's still in the prime of his life. Your thoughts about the swap?
First of all, it's near and dear to my heart because they left behind Paul, who is a Marine and somebody who served his country, who is wrongfully, in my opinion, wrongfully accused of something, and then took somebody who's a celebrity. This plays into the whole wokeness culture. It's everything that's wrong with America. Actually doing – he talks about how he wants gun control, he wants peace, and he wants diplomacy, and he does everything that was based on political correctness rather than on something that's politically effective.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable, too, when you think about Paul Whale and they say, we have other pieces to play. What are the pieces? We don't. There's some German detainee, and Germany's like, yeah, we're not giving this guy up. So good luck with that. Good luck to you, too. Congressman-elect Dr. Rich McCormick, it's great to meet you.
It's great
and
to
I'm
meet
very
you.
Optimistic. I think you're going to be a huge success. Tell you what, no one's going to outwork you. That's correct.
Right? I have your work ethic, so I hope not.
Thank you. Back in a moment.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We aren't directing private social media companies on how to manage their content. These are decisions that they have to make as appropriate. Now, look, we obviously don't want to see, the public square polluted with hate speech and disinformation. That's not a good use of the information environment for the American people. But it's up to these social media companies to determine how they're going to manage their content, how they are going to deliver that content to their users.
Yeah, that's fine. But if the FBI is meeting with you every single week and telling you to look out for X, Y, and Z, and most of your former employees, the employees at Twitter were former employees of the FBI and CIA, I'm pretty sure this is the type of environment that is not going to be fair and balanced. And we know it isn't. 99%, according to Elon Musk, 99% of political donations to the employees at Twitter went to Democrats, and that's the way they made that operation. And it's all been exposed, even though you would never know it by reading the Washington Post, New York Times, or any other network. John Levine is with us now, New York Post writer. You hear him, you see him all the time in our studio on Fox Nation and now on our channel. John, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back, Brian.
So, John, you must have been flipping out. I thought about you because you're always a step ahead with the investigation of the laptop. But now we're getting revelations from Twitter. Now we're on our fourth tranche. Your takeaway?
Yeah, it's just been new bombshells every single week, every single day. You know, in some cases we're launching new ones, and I feel like we're really, I guess the word is vindication for a lot of it, because you a subject like shadow banning and censoring, you know, conservative voices and really any contrary voices. I know people, Brian, who've been going on to me about shadow banning for like 8 years, longer maybe.
Did you doubt them?
I never doubted them. I never did. Because I, you can also sort of see, you know, okay, this person has 500,000 followers and they're real followers. You can test to see, you know, how many are bots, how many are real. And you can see they have 500,000 followers, but they're getting 10 retweets, 2 likes. Like, this doesn't make sense. There's something weird happening here. And Twitter forever said you were imagining it. Oh, it's maybe you should try having better content, Brian. It's you're the problem, you know? And it was so convenient and it was so smug. And it was like, obviously, you're going to come up with an excuse for why your tweets are terrible, Brian. But the real, they were gaslighting us. And now finally we have the proof. And of course, the people who lied about this for 7 or 8 years are not going to turn around and be like, oh, you caught us with our hand in the cookie jar. It's like, they're just going to try to power through it. But, you know, the American people can see it now. It's clear as day. And there's a historic – I'm not even thinking about the news cycle. I'm thinking about history. I'm thinking about the books that are going to be written 5, 10, 15 years. And this is so important that there is going to be a definitive accounting of the record for historians and for the future that exists. And that is really – I feel vindicated in that.
So Matt Taibbi is one of the three reporters asked to bring this forward. One is Barry Weiss, and now Michael Schellenberger. Schellenberger's been on our show a lot. He's been on our channel, and he's a former Democrat that now is kind of independent, just trying to get things right, and does not believe the world's going to end in 5 minutes like every green activist.
Whoa, iconoclast.
Yes. So Matt Taibbi writes, he says, I'm a believer in Matt Taibbi. He goes, Yoel Roth. This is what he highlights. It happens. I'm a believer in calendar transparency, but I reached a certain point where my meetings became very interesting to people, and there weren't meeting names generic enough to cover. So people were saying, what are you looking at? Who are you meeting with? So they were meeting with the FBI weekly. And this anonymous staffer writes him, very boring business meeting that is definitely not happy, but not about Trump. Sarcastic. Yoel Roth writes, pretty much. Yoel Roth writes back, definitely not meeting with the FBI, I swear. So they're mocking the fact that obviously they're having meetings that they never should get out, that they knew they were insulated from, because they never thought a billionaire would buy it and reveal it.
Right. It's sad. You know, you would have hoped that a private business would have responded with a little more resistance to coercion from our federal government to intrude on their private practices. But it seems not. What's really disturbing here is you see the government kind of outsourcing the enforcement. The government can't suppress speech directly. It can't clear free expression in this country. But what they're doing is they're kind of leaning on social media companies to shut down speech that they know they themselves can't. And if it's not illegal, it strikes me as very close to illegal and very iffy in terms of, you know, violations of our constitutional rights. And I'm sure it's all going to come out in Representative Jim Jordan's sprawling hearing in his House Judiciary Committee of politicization of our intelligence agencies, of which I'm sure this will be a major, major part.
So John Kirby, at least, you know, he's on all these networks yesterday, but the only question he got about this was from Shannon. Shannon Bream on Fox News Sunday, cut one.
We aren't directing private social media companies on how to manage their content. These are decisions that they have to make as appropriate. Now, look, we obviously don't want to see, the public square polluted with hate speech and disinformation. That's not a good use of the information.
So there you go. Here we go. That. Now you don't have to worry about hate speech. What is hate speech? Well, that
hate speech,
I'm worried about the QAnon and the Oath Keepers and the president, former president, activating them through some of his tweets. So that's why the FBI gave suggestions to Twitter.
Yeah, suggestion. It's like, you know, it's like when in these, you ever watch any of these mob movies? It's like, it might be a good idea for you to pay us to give you some protection. It's like, we're not saying you need to do that, but the FBI is saying, well, it's just, it might be a good idea if you deleted these. You know, if the FBI gives you a suggestion, it's hard to take that as anything but, you know, remove it.
So you have three things, mainly. Donald Trump, the president who wants to get reelected. You have, then all of a sudden the pandemic hits and Anthony Fauci decides and others, what is going to be real? What should be listened to? And anybody who has a counter opinion, and it's not so much John Levine and Brian Kilmeade, but what if I told you a Stanford doctor, world renowned, wants to come out and has an opinion on kids getting masked and kids getting vaccine? It's different from what the administration's saying. Okay.
Right.
Well, you know, you don't like my opinion. I don't think you should touch it. But you just say, well, that's a dangerous opinion. But you look at a guy like Jay Bhattacharya, and he is clearly shadow banned and then banned, cut 10.
I'm actually part of that Louisiana and Missouri Attorney General's office suit against the Biden administration already, where we found evidence from a dozen or more federal agencies of regular contact between the government agencies and Twitter and other social media companies, telling them what to censor, sometimes who to censor on COVID issues. There's no doubt in my mind that there was a significant government effort to suppress discussion about COVID policy that contradicted government policy during the pandemic. And it would not surprise me at all to learn that the Twitter's blacklisting of me was in response to something the government was telling Twitter to do.
I mean, these are prestigious guys, John. I mean, and they can't believe it. And I imagine if he's out there, he's not exactly a right-wing zealot.
No, I mean, this guy's a Stanford University professor.
He's
widely respected. I mean, it's one – if I don't think it's right for Twitter to shadow ban and censor, you know, anyone. But if you're going to say, well, it was just trolls and it was just conservatives, it wasn't just conservatives. And that's what's important for your listeners to get. It never starts with just the hate speech and just the bad guys. That's always the pretext. Eventually, it's going to be like, well, okay, you have a disagreement about climate change. You think the world's not going to end in 5 years? You're going to get shadow banned. You don't think we should close down schools? You're going to get shadow banned. And the thing about censorship is it never just stops with the thing you're censoring. It has a way of creeping into other areas, and that's why it's so dangerous. And you have to shut it down everywhere, and that means even including and protecting the voices you don't like and you don't agree with.
How about Michelle Obama contacting Twitter saying, ban Donald Trump? Really? Every former first lady, would Laura Bush weigh in too? What is she doing? How comfortable does she feel contacting a social media company? That she's right. Doing that. What is she doing?
Clearly very comfortable. I mean, look, we saw the amount of revolving door between government and this company is really unprecedented. You got Jim Baker at the FBI. But then we just discover Fauci's niece is working there. Like who?
Schumer's two daughters.
Schumer's daughter. It's like it's like clown car. It's unbelievable. How many? I mean. At a certain point, this is not a coincidence. This is probably some degree of deliberate policy from Twitter, and where they can sort of Twitter clearly was a willing participant in this. They wanted to have this relationship with the government. Joel Roth does not read like a person meeting with the FBI under duress. I think quite the opposite. So it was clearly a relationship that they wanted. And being in bed with the government has its advantages too. You don't know what preferential treatment they were receiving, and at the end of the day, Twitter has interests before the government, and there probably was some degree of one hand washes the other.
So I want you to see what Elon Musk just put out. I think his second to last tweet. He said, "Pronouns. My pronouns are prosecute Fauci. Really." Prosecute Fauci. So he's about to walk out the door. Everybody except those horrible conservatives think he's a genius and a saint. But upon further review, what he's doing or what he missed and his lack of condemnation on China or curiosity about the origins and unwilling to be open to therapeutics and the pushback on the original Operation Warp Speed when it came to the vaccines, the don't wear a mask, wear a mask, the pandemic's not going to be a problem here. All that stuff, this guy gets a pass. But Musk, who voted for Obama twice, and I imagine Biden this time, because he has differences with Trump, says prosecute Fauci.
Right. Well, people forget, notwithstanding everything you said, Anthony Fauci lied about the U.S. funding gain-of-function research in China at the Wuhan lab. And then the NIH had to put out a statement basically being like, no, actually, we did fund it. Or it was EcoHealth Alliance. So, I mean... Look, at a certain point, is perjury a crime in this country or not? Or is it only a crime when certain people commit it? Jack Dorsey, former head of Twitter, was running around in House and Senate hearings saying, we don't shadow ban, we don't censor. That's just straight up perjury, because we now know that they do. We have the primary source documents saying that they do. So what are we going to do about that?
Nothing, because the Department of Justice is right now in the hands of the Democratic Party, even though it should be apolitical. We know it's not. And nothing's going to be bunned by Jack Dorsey. Now, clearly, he was not making every decision. That's true. But it does show he was in the loop on a lot of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Elon has always been willing to give Jack a pass. I don't know that I'm super. I mean, the buck stops at the top. He was the CEO. So even if he wasn't in the loop on every decision, he allowed himself to be left out of the loop. I guess that's the critical thing.
So John, right now, at one point, do you expect that other networks will pick this up? Or is this part of the whole befuddling, it's not news if I don't see it and if I don't report it?
Right. I think you've got places like New York Times, CNN, NPR. They are so deep in this Bermuda news triangle. Of like hear no evil, see no evil. You've got them saying to their audience for years now that all this stuff was just right wing insane conspiracy theories. What are they going to do? Just do a 180? Be like, actually, it was us. We were the wrong one. I mean, it's just their audience wouldn't have it, and a lot of these guys just would rather just power through it and hope we get on the other side of the news cycle. You know, it's like going through a storm at sea and just keep powering through it. Because that is just easier than reckoning with their audience, with the truth, unfortunately. A lot of these guys view themselves first and foremost as narrative setters. And the responsibility is to the narrative, not to whatever happens to be inconveniently true or not.
So Jay Bacciara just tweeted this out, recently, a few hours ago. I spent the afternoon yesterday at Twitter headquarters at the invitation of Elon Musk to find out more about the trend blacklist that Twitter placed me and more on. A short thread on what I found out follows, and then he has the following thread. And everybody else is weighing in, and many other people are looking to ignore. Will you pay for your blue check mark?
Me?
Yeah. Starting today, well, it's $8.
Yeah, you know, look, I'll say this. I think it's totally lame to pay $8 to have a blue check on Twitter. That's the first thing I'll say. But the second thing I'll say, now that I've said that, is I probably will do it just because everyone else is going to do it. Are you going to do it?
Yeah. I'm going to do it. Yeah, at least we know for now on, I want to find out about the investigation, what happened in the past, and I could probably trust it in the future. So game on. I'll do it. Sure. John, and I'll continue to read your columns in the New York Post. John Levine, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. When we come back, I'll take your calls. 1-866-408-7669. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Would you support a Democratic opponent against Senator Sinema?
I support progressive candidates all over this country, people who have the guts to take on powerful special interests.
Does she have the guts to take on powerful special interests?
No, she doesn't. She is a corporate Democrat who has, in fact, along with Senator Manchin, sabotaged enormously important legislation.
Yes, like filibustering, packing the courts, and the Build Back Better plan. There would have been like $4.5 trillion. She said, scale it back, and I might be interested. And then Joe Manchin sold her out by doing a deal without even telling her, putting all the pressure on her. One of the most compelling exchanges was John Tester. I guess the whole thing was, let's make Sinema the number one story this week, continue to ignore the Twitter story. And Sinema is a big story, no doubt about it. So they asked Tester, it's like, you were against the filibuster, right? He goes, yeah. He goes, then why was she taking all the blame for blowing up the fact that you guys wanted to blow up the filibuster? Not a word. Because they never went out there. He would have went along with it. He goes along with everything. Angus King is an independent. No one runs against him because the Democratic Party goes, no, we like Angus King. Let them go ahead and run against Kyrsten Sinema in 2 years. If she goes ahead and votes independent and goes across the aisle and they're able to get things done and work with the House where she used to be, you just watch. Come primary time, the Democrats put up their opponent. Okay, fine. You got your nominee. And then Kyrsten Sinema is an independent but Democrat. And then you have a Republican. You know these Democrats are going to split the ticket and a Republican's going to profit from it. He or she will gain from it. You just watch. They're going to overplay their hand. I was stunned to see this. The stats show in 19 states where this study's done, do you know the independent party is more popular than Republican and Democrat, and meaning non-party? People who have said they're independent is growing at a higher rate than people who say they're Republican or Democrat. And so when you have now a third person on the left who say, I'm only going to caucus with the Democrats, but I'm not going to be one, I think that's pretty significant, don't you? Because independence is probably the way to go. And they say the Independence Party in Arizona is also bigger, especially than the Republican and Democrat Party. So that is pretty significant. So if you just keep an eye on where this country's heading, maybe people want people that are going to get things done. I'm not saying that Kyrsten Sinema is not going to combine with Democrats to pass some horrible legislation that hopefully will be stopped in the House. But there's also an important thing for you to know is that she did the thing that she probably has to do because evidently, all Democrats are so mad at her in Arizona, but Republicans kind of like her. So depending on who's running, she might have made a great personal political move and made it more interesting from here on in the Senate, because the Republicans certainly blew that. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, I'll be in Point Pleasant, New Jersey, Friday, McAllen, Texas, on Saturday. BrianKilmeade.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. I appreciate the coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Jonathan Turley at the bottom of the hour. Michael Goodwin right now, a New York Post columnist, Fox News contributor. And we're really focusing on a lot which is going on, and many of which, because nobody else is doing it, and it is of extreme interest for the betterment of our country. And that is what's been exposed about social media in this country and how it's really manipulating America's thought patterns, what you read and what you hear and what you were able to see. And what's been exposed thanks to Elon Musk and by reporters who are getting access to the communications that exist prior to him making the purchase for $44 billion. So before we get to Michael, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You know, there's some concern that if you engage in this kind of trade, deeply asymmetrical trade, does it put other Americans in harm's way in the future?
No kidding. Preet Bharara, I know, Democratic stalwart, is the one who put Victor Boot behind bars. Now there's Victor Boot blowback days after the Merchant of Death was swapped for a 32-year-old center from the WNBA.
Number two.
The system is overwhelmed right now with the rescission of Title 42 authorities without being able to expel people back. It's just incredible, the dereliction of this administration in putting us all at risk.
Ron Vitiello, not waiting for December 12th. That is when Title 42 expires. When that goes away, our borders are expected to be flooded. But I am seeing video right now and over the weekend that show thousands upon thousands are coming to our border in a way that Bill Malusia has not even seen before. We are being invaded. Evil intentions or not, we have no idea. This has got to stop.
Number one.
In looking at the Twitter files, I did look and see in Matt Taibbi's Substack where he said that there were weekly meetings between the FBI and DHS and Twitter. I certainly hope that that was part of the National Security Council approved process.
John Radcliffe, former DNI director. Twitter files part four. Links to intel agencies emerge and left-wing bias on COVID and Hunter are more clear. What we know and why the media isn't bothering to even report it, but we will. Michael Goodwin joins us now. Michael, you used to write for the New York Times. I know you wrote about their strike, their pseudo-strike. But let's talk about what Elon Musk has done. He struck into the heart of social media and the monopoly, but no one seems to be paying attention. I don't know. It reminds me a little of the Hunter Biden story.
Good morning, Brian. Yes, and you used a word I think that would have been banned on Twitter had you put it in a tweet. You called the southern border situation an invasion. That's the sort of language that Twitter wouldn't allow conservatives to use. It had to be, you know, just sort of a good thing. It had to be positive about America, about America's role in the world. And the more we learn about what was going on in Twitter, the more it sounds like almost like a child's game. I mean, you have these far, far left people. I mean, so far left, Brian, that it's almost impossible to describe them even as Democrats. I mean, they are like the progressive cream of the progressive crop. And they have effectively invented a new language to describe their prejudices. It's, you know, amplification, or it's not to be amplified. I mean, they never quite, it's almost a 1984 kind of language that is the opposite of what it is they're actually doing. They never use the word suppress. They put a bot on something. They do different things. Yeah, we'll tag this. And it's it's all got this kind of justification. Like, everybody here agrees. Everybody here thinks alike. You've got the revolving door of James Baker from the FBI to Twitter. It's sort of like the revolving door of Congress and lobbyists. Here you have the FBI and Twitter. They have these relationships with, we know the FBI. We don't know if there are other, the CIA, but we know the Democratic Party has a propaganda arm and an enforcement arm at Twitter. And so the things that the Democratic Party doesn't like somehow mysteriously get banned or restricted on Twitter. I mean, the phrase shadow banning, right? It's beautiful. It doesn't really quite tell you what it is, except when you see the impact that people cannot see your tweet, right? It's restricted. How they do all this, their manipulation of the technology, their manipulation of language, all in service of an ideology. I mean, this is quite something we have not seen before, although, of course, it's very much straight out of 1984, George Orwell's description of how the state smothers everything, twists everything to use it to its own service. And so in this case, misinformation is something the Democrats don't want to hear, right? Truth is something the Democrats do want to hear. And so everything gets labeled according to its ideology, and we are never to be known this. In fact, we probably still wouldn't know this had it not been for the Hunter Biden saga, because it was so clear that what it was ideology and not facts.
You know, and with their exchange, they kind of knew they did it. They said, oh, my goodness, basically, what are we doing? And they couldn't. They all shut it down. But it was so obvious it shouldn't have been shut down. You shut down the press secretary's Twitter account for retweeting a story in the oldest newspaper in the country. And they kind of the internal dialogue shows that they thought, we're in over our heads now. But because there was nobody calling them out, they have an election and anything to get rid of Donald Trump. But, Michael, the other thing that was pretty clear, Kevin McCarthy joined me on One Nation on Saturday night. And he said, we're not stopping just on here. We want to know about the 51, mostly 41, 40 plus were CIA guys. I think 43 were CIA people. Why they signed off on saying the Hunter Biden laptop was classic Russian disinformation. Listen to what he wants to do.
Those 51 intel agents that signed a letter that said the Hunter Biden information was all wrong, was Russia collusion, many of them have a security clearance. We're going to bring them before committee. I'm going to have them have a hearing, bring them and subpoena them before committee. Why did they sign it? Why did they lie to the American public? A Clapper, a Brennan. Why did you use the reputation that America was able to give to you more information, but use it for a political purpose and lie to the American public? It's exactly what Adam Schiff has done to us, and this has got to stop.
And remember, that factored into the debate. You said, you're Hunter Biden laptop, you know, Hunter, your son doing this. No, there were 51 intel agencies that said, then Chris Wallace jumped on them, and they just moved on. That was the moment. Meanwhile, Joe Biden lying, knowing the laptop was real, the communication's authentic. They know his crack-addicted son's pictures were on it, and he went along with it. 51 intel agency experts said it was it, including people I like Mike Morrell and Leon Panetta, Tennessee, started as a Republican. Michael Hayden was appointed by George W. Bush. They all signed, say this is classic Russian disinformation. Nobody even looked into it themselves. But that is all part of the conspiracy.
Well, Brian, and what's interesting about that is, one of my readers wrote to me, and I published Sunday a little item. So now we know the laptop is authentic, right? I mean, the Post knew it all along, but let's just stipulate that it is now almost universally recognized as true, right? The New York Times authenticated, Washington Post, many others. So where are these 51 now? Why are they not concerned about Joe Biden, given that the laptop was true?
Oh.
So if the laptop is true, doesn't it mean that Joe Biden profited from Hunter's businesses with China? It means that Joe really is the big guy. it means that Tony Bobulinski told the truth. So if all of these things are now true, why aren't these 51 intelligence officers going crazy saying Joe Biden is compromised with China and Russia? Why have they not, you know, yet woken up to the reality that the laptop is true and the implications of that fact?
So I got to give Ro Khanna credit. He's a very nice guy, by the way, and he's a Bernie Sanders guy. I obviously don't agree with him, but I agree with he got into this for the right reason, I think. So he represents most of that area. And here's one cut of what he said yesterday with Maria. Cut three.
I think if we want any hope of coming together at as a country, the first thing we have to do is say people should be able to express their view. We can't tell people who we disagree with, please just be silenced. We don't want to hear you. We don't want to engage with you. Let me tell you, that's just going to create further polarization, further alienation. And I've been surprised how many Republicans who don't agree with a single thing I said believe, OK, at least we can have a dialogue. And that, I think, is the first step to being together as Americans. We could all pledge allegiance to the Constitution, to the First Amendment. That's what makes us Americans.
You went on to say this, cut two.
Don't think what I did was anything exceptional. I was just standing up for our Constitution and for our First Amendment. It is wrong to censor newspapers. It is wrong to censor journalists. Look, the New York Post hasn't written a kind thing about me in my 6 years in Congress. They're a conservative point of view paper. But that doesn't mean that you can stop publishing their pieces or articles.
And they found out in communication that he was upset by this in 2020. And then he just said, listen, I'll do it. I don't think I did anything extraordinary. Yeah, Ro Khanna, you did, because nobody else did it.
Wouldn't it be something if Ro Khanna or someone who believes as he believes was the leader of the Democratic Party? I mean, imagine what a different party that would be. He is exceptional within that party, and that's the problem. You have not heard a single Democrat other than him come out and talk about what we have discovered with the Twitter censorship. Not a one of them. Not Chuck Schumer, certainly not Nancy Pelosi, not Joe Biden. You know why, Brian? Because they were all happy. They were happy
they were
to
in
have
on it.
Twitter doing their dirty work.
Chuck Schumer's two daughters work at Twitter.
Yeah.
Anthony Fauci's daughter works at Twitter.
It's a captive institution of the Democratic Party. It is there to do the bidding of the Democratic Party. Its staff, 99% of its financial contributions went to Democratic candidates. It is synonymous with the Democratic Party.
You know, here's the thing. If President Trump kept his powder dry, decepted the election, and all this stuff came up, and he was just declared when he wanted to declare, let this stuff come up. You don't take documents, even though he had no evil intent, I believe, but you don't take documents. You don't make things harder for yourself. He'd have people clamoring for a run again. They'd see how things were biased against him. They were working this before January 6th to make sure he didn't get elected again. Anything to make sure Trump didn't win an election. That's what it seems. And if you think that they're going to back off and say Ron DeSantis is more palatable or Nikki Haley makes more sense, we'll just come back. Facebook will just go back and play it even again. That they're going to go after him just as hard.
Oh, no question. And they will use the same tools. I mean, again, the Washington Post, the New York Times, they are not covering what's happening at Twitter. They are not writing about these releases. They do not find it to be a problem because they have been doing something similar on their own. Every time Donald Trump opened his mouth for the last 4 years, the New York Times called it a lie. They call him a liar. Not Hillary Clinton, not Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer. Only Republicans are hit with that label. And that is the problem. It is such a lock on the left that the Twitter revelations have not broken open the left and brought more Ro Khannas in, that the 51 intelligence officers haven't asked to come before Congress or even sign a new letter saying we were wrong. We were misled. Who misled you? I think it was the Biden team. I mean, look, John Brennan is James Clapper. They got their jobs to go on television and to continue to defend the Obama administration and the Biden administration. That's what they're doing. They are Michael Hayden somewhere lost the plot.
He had a stroke.
He used to be a respectable person. He became a partisan. Somehow this disease infected otherwise honorable people, and they, you know, whether it's Trump derangement syndrome or whatever it is you want to call it, they all fell into the same talking points, and none of them apparently could think for themselves. None of them were worried about the erosion of civil liberties, the erosion of free speech. None of them seemed to care. And Brian, to this moment, there's no evidence that they care now. There's no evidence of remorse.
Michael, there's so much to write about. I know you have so much to choose from, and I'm just I'm upset that even if the New York Times wanted to vilify something there that they didn't like, how can you ignore it? It's depressing to see people ignore a major story because it makes them look bad or their candidate look bad. And they do have candidates. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to come back, take some calls. I see your numbers up there. And then Jonathan Turley, he was sick last week, but was still able to write. And what he's able to say shows that Jack Dorsey could be in some legal trouble. We'll discuss it when we come back. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go out to Dean, listening on WABC in New Jersey. Hey, Dean.
Yeah, how you doing, Brian? You know, I heard you say that the laptop, we wouldn't be hearing any of this. But
Michael Goodwin.
Can I go back a little further than that? It was Trump. If it wasn't for Trump, we would have Hillary Clinton running against Jeb Bush, and Jeb Bush would have lost, Hillary Clinton would have won, and none of this would be exposed. They all went bananas, and they didn't care what they exposed of themselves that they've been doing all along because they wanted Trump out. And now they're exposed. Thank
Dean,
you.
Dean, the other thing is, I think, like I said at the end, what I said to Michael, if you think it's just Trump, if DeSantis gets the nomination, they're going to come out after him and make him seem just as unpalatable as Trump, just as demonic as they do Trump. They're not going to stop.
I understand they're not going to stop. But let me just tell you this story about the guy who broke the 4-minute mile, right? It was Roger Bannister. Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile when everybody, the physicists, the biologists, everybody said the human body cannot run faster than 4-minute mile. He breaks the 4-minute mile, but that's not the thing that did it. After he broke the 4-minute mile, within 3 months, 5 other people did it. And that's where Ron DeSantis came from. And that's where all these other people are going to
get. There's no doubt about it. And does he have you, if Trump runs, does he have your vote?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Dean in WABC in New Jersey. You got one, Mr. President.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In looking at the Twitter files, I did look and see in Matt Taibbi's Substack where he said that there were weekly meetings between the FBI and DHS and Twitter. And I know there are whistleblowers that are saying that as well. But Matt Taibbi also says there was only one reference to my office and someone liaising with my office. And I assume I certainly hope that was part of the National Security Council approved process for election security briefings.
So that was John Ratcliffe, DNI. He was director of national intelligence and left out of the loop on this, it seems. Jonathan Turley has been studying all this while recovering from the flu himself. It hasn't stopped him from putting out some great columns on this. Jonathan, so Ratcliffe, you could see, is for him, he's a calm guy. He was totally befuddled by this, that the DNI has been brought into this, and he had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I think that's part of what is fascinating about these files coming out, is that it's really pulling back the curtain on how these agencies rather were quite bold in holding these direct contact. We had previous evidence that the CDC, for example, reached out to deal with what were considered unauthorized or unapproved viewpoints that had to be removed from Twitter. What you really see is a sense of license that existed, and it existed because they knew that both the media and Twitter had their back, that they were protected. They could go ahead and do precisely what some of us had been writing in the media. So you got to keep in mind that these government officials were meeting with Twitter when many of us were writing columns saying, this really looks like censorship by surrogate. It looks like Twitter is dealing with the government and carrying out its wishes. These officials were not deterred at all by those columns. They went ahead and had these meetings.
They did. And why would Jack Dorsey, from what we know right now, not only urge Elon Musk to buy it, but then was on him to start letting out more information? Don't do it little by little. Get it all out there. Well, it turned out James Baker was blocking some of it, stopped Taibbi and Barry Weiss from doing it. But having said that, this is kind of weird. You know the mind of somebody that might have screwed up. I've never known that approach. Let me sell it to somebody that could actually buy it and out me.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, I find Dorsey's character to be almost Shakespearean. It's so complex and rather tragic. It's not clear if he was a dupe or the designated defendant. You know, it's clear that they were engaging in suppressive techniques. It's clear that they were doing shadow banning. It's clear that they were censoring. So the question is, did he know that, or was he sort of a dupe? You know, that he was just out of the loop. And Musk himself has sort of suggested that he might have been out of the loop, even though he was a member of one of these internal secret committees that was engaging in censorship. There were critical players at Twitter that were sort of the censors in chief, and they were the ones making these decisions. But what Dorsey said to Congress under oath appears to be untrue. And therefore, he is at risk. I assume he has gone out and retained counsel because he's going to need it. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to be prosecuted. I expect that Merrick Garland is not going to be inclined to prosecute Dorsey or anyone at Twitter. But it could get increasingly embarrassing because that's the segment that's being played on Fox News, even though it's being ignored by other media, does appear to be a false statement under oath, unless we're missing something.
So here's what else Radcliffe said to Maria yesterday, cut six.
The Office of the Director of National Intelligence would have only been authorized to participate in Trump National Security Council approved and coordinated process for election security briefings to groups of private companies. So it would include companies like Twitter, but many other companies, YouTube, Microsoft, as well as state election officials to talk about threats. None of those meetings, but Maria, would have had anything to do with content moderation, much less anything to do with specifically about the Biden laptop as Russian disinformation. So there never would have been any authority or reason for anyone within the intelligence community to be saying anything otherwise. You know, I think that's pretty clearly stated.
So here's the Director of National Intelligence reading this communication, internal communication, Slack and tweets and emails, and saying, "What we wouldn't, I never would have authorized this."
Yeah, and what we're seeing from these files is something that's quite different. This is part of the reason, I think, that you're seeing most of the networks bearing the story. It's like the Hunter Biden laptop. You just won't read about these files on other networks. And the reason is that they're highly invested in it, because what these files suggest is that the public has been lied to, not just by people like Dorsey potentially, but also by these networks. You know, they're simply running out of runway of denial. You know, these are censorship apologists who first said there was no censorship, then said there was no, you know, blocking, banning, suppressing, throttling. All of that appears to be shattered now by Musk's release of this information. And so the only thing that they have is just to not cover it. But it's not going to work. You know, the problem is you've got Fox News, you've got Wall Street Journal, New York Post, other media outlets that are going to be reporting this. And at the end, the House is going to open this up. And it's going to open up the Hunter Biden matter. It's also going to open up the social media stuff. And so I think that this is all going to come crashing down, as it often does when you have a censorship system. The more serious question we have to ask ourselves is whether we have a new type of state media problem. You know, the Constitution was written to deal with the old type of state media. You know, you've got a Ministry of Information, a propaganda ministry. But what we've really seen is you don't need that. You can have a state media by consent, you know, that's not by compulsion or coercion.
Well, everything you're saying is correct, obviously. Nobody wants that, clearly. I was also interviewing another FBI agent who just wrote a book about what went on at the FBI. He says, after 9/11, the FBI changed its mandate. Instead of investigating crimes that happened, they were trying to get ahead of the next attack, the next terror attack. To do that, they had to tap in and get permission. We know all about the FISA to stay ahead of the next terrorist attack, to track down forensically who's getting paid and where the money was coming from, who would be the next agent, who was talking from out of country into our country. And that whole mindset has led us to, and that skill set has led us to the point where the FBI is saying, okay, let's stop the next attack here that's going to be perpetrated by the words of Donald Trump or one of his sycophants or one of his supporters. Let's start shadow banning them. So that mindset changed since Mueller took over the FBI. Their mission changed.
Well, I think that's true. You also see that with things like the Widmer kidnapping plot.
Tom Baker, by the way.
Where the FBI, there were more FBI agents and conspirators in that case. But I also think it's even broader than that. This whole idea that speech itself is harmful, that what we have to be afraid of is free speech, is really coming from universities originally, and it's now metastasized throughout the political system. And that's what's really behind all this. Once the people in Twitter were given the license to protect us against free speech, then they just gave full sort of venting to their bias. And you see that in these issues. You see those when, for example, Donald Trump sends out what's a truthful story where he was talking about some problem with a postal office, and Twitter pounced on it. And it turned out that they then realized it was true. But instead of sort of reexamining how they're dealing with free speech, there was sort of an attaboy that was sent saying, good work on the speed of that. Well, you read that and you're like, what good work? It was a truthful story. You went to DEFCON 1, you know, on a story that turned out you could have just Googled and found out was true.
So when you say that Jack Dorsey could be in legal trouble, people have told me, well, did he volunteer to come in? Was he sworn into his testimony? And you have to have an attorney general that wants to prosecute him. And it's not likely because it makes he was out there some way, directly or indirectly, protecting the Democratic point of view. It wouldn't behoove them to do it. It's as if Trump was in office, the attorney general going after the CEO of Truth Social.
Well, that unfortunately is, I wrote a column a while back called The Amazing Shrinking Merrick Garland. And I'm very disappointed about it because I supported his nomination. I thought he was a great choice. But he has not, unfortunately, reached the expectations that some of us had of him. He's been accused of being fairly biased, of aggressively pursuing Republicans, conservatives, pro-life groups, and not showing the same aggression or interest on the other side. And the expectation today is that he would be a hard sell to get any prosecution of someone like Dorsey. The big question about Dorsey is whether some of these key Twitter officials left him in the dark to give him plausible deniability, knowing that he would be asked about censorship. He asked about, you know, suppressive techniques, whether he was kept in the dark so he could say no. But that may be a case of willful blindness. He might have been just a dupe, or he might have known. But we're going to likely find out. So the problem for, I think, Merrick Garland is that the House could present a very strong case for prosecution. Garland just went after a series of Trump people over statements that were misleading or false. He could be facing a number of cases of contempt or false testimony that's going to really put him in a bind to either show that he's consistent or that he's rather hypocritical in how he brings these cases.
Well, the one thing is, it's pretty clear that Twitter's not going to be a problem anymore. Yeah, there might be things that certain things get on and certain things is hate speech and isn't. And the old-fashioned way of debating what hate speech is, I love that. That's the old-fashioned, as opposed to just what speech I disagree with. Number two is, will Facebook, YouTube, whatever emerges next, be forced to comply as well and straighten out their act?
Yeah, I think that's true. And if this was happening at Facebook, it's almost ridiculous to suggest that it was not happening at these other companies. The only reason we know about this is that we have an eccentric billionaire who believes in free speech and was willing to put billions of dollars down to expose this. That obviously is not happening at Facebook or YouTube or these other companies. They still have that sense of absolute impunity to do what they're doing. That may come to an end with the House investigation, but the assumption is that the same type of thing, if not greater, was being done at these other companies. You know, Dorsey himself was not viewed as antagonistic towards free speech. His replacement, Agrawal, was openly antagonistic to free speech. And so it's funny because between the two, Dorsey was viewed as the least offensive of the two. Agrawal was a bloody nightmare for those of us in the free speech community. I mean, he said he was tired of talking about who should be allowed to speak and instead wanted to focus on who should be allowed to be heard. I mean, it was just Orwellian. But Dorsey, the biggest – what is clear is that at a minimum, Dorsey failed to actually inform himself of what was happening. And at worst, he may have committed a crime. He may have committed perjury.
So lastly – Hunter Biden is going to be in the crosshairs of these investigators. Plus, he's got a gun charge and an ongoing FBI investigation. I guess they're confused about something. They have an ongoing investigation. It goes on for years. So he is pondering, as you know, in a Washington Post story, getting on the offensive, going after Tony Bobulinski, going after John Paul Mac Isaac, who owned the laptop repair shop where the laptop was dropped off by him, evidently in a drug-induced stupor. His attorney, Kevin Morris, and a good friend of his and benefactor who paid off his $2 million delinquent tax bill, says they might go after Fox News, Eric Trump, Rudy Giuliani, or anybody else that goes after him. What about this strategy?
Yeah, I wrote about this in the New York Post, and because the Washington Post story really shocked me, because being in this town a long time, these types of scorched earth campaigns are generally not public. People like the Clinton campaign would do things like the Steele dossier in utter secret, even denying to the media that they funded that effort. So this was really weird, because suddenly the Washington Post was not only being given the story, but given access. These people were giving direct quotes to the Post saying, yeah, we're going to go after all these key witnesses. We're going to bring defamation lawsuits. And you're reading this thing, well, why would they want to do this? And the concern is that this is an effort to intimidate witnesses. Whether it's intended, it certainly would have that effect. And so, you name someone like Tony Bobulinski. Now, this guy is a very key witness. He was the business advisor brought in by the Bidens. He stands in direct contradiction to what the President of the United States has repeatedly told the public. And so the Washington Post reports that they're going to go after him, that they're working aggressively to bag this guy. Well, that sounds a lot like an intimidating type of campaign.
Yeah, and they said option two is just to keep their head down and ignore it. I go with option two. With the arrogance of anybody to green light that first option, when you know how guilty he is and what we know of in the video and the and the email exchanges. Jonathan, I look forward to you continuing coverage of this. We're on tranche number four. I look forward to the rest. Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.
When we come back, I'll take your calls. 1-866-408-7669. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Special thanks to everybody, KFTK, for coming out and seeing me Friday night at the Missouri Athletic Club. I had a chance to see Mark Reardon and Mark Cox and just had a great time seeing everybody there. So it was just to see everybody out there, to see the passion they have for the country. And by the way, one of the finest clubs around in the country, and Annie Fry, of course, of one of the finest clubs in the country, and just be able to go there and sign everybody's book is just great. And one of the big things, one of the biggest things that ever happened to the show was when KTFK decided to first air it on delay and then take it live. And the people of St. Louis has really embraced it. It was my perfect mix because there is like the Canton, Ohio of soccer, or the Hermann Trophy Award winners, which is like the Heisman for college soccer, from Alexi Lalas to Tony Meola is on there. And John Harkes and his son. So you to see that and then have to mix that with history and news, it was just a perfect night. So thanks. I hope to see everyone in Point Pleasant on Friday night right in New Jersey, and then Saturday in McAllen, Texas. For have to find out details and make your reservation, just go to BrianKilmeade.com. And it's all about the president and freedom fighter, Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, and the battle to save America's soul. Even though it's on paperback, I got new information in there. And I think if you get it out real quick, if you make the order now online, I could personalize it for you for the holidays. But it's got to be today or tomorrow, I would think. Although I'm not diminishing the postal system, I sometimes worry about the execution. Brian Kilmeade Show, so glad you're here.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. And once again, I'll say I can't take it for granted anymore. Seeing the Christmas tree at this time of year, Rockefeller Center, this feels like 2019. Last year didn't. The year before obviously didn't. And this year, you know, the tree was up. And remember, they originally said you can look at the tree, but you can't stop walking. You had to just keep it. It was the craziest thing. But now the New York City is packed. But when I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is I do the talk in New York for WABC. And Mark Thiessen's here, my guest. And first five
big stories.
I thought
the first thing you did was put on your mask.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. This is the wrong show.
Did I go to the wrong studio?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Right. I thought I was at another.
No,
network.
What I would
sorry.
Do. My facial mask. So I do like to keep my skin youthful.
Of course. Yeah. That's
right.
Why you look so
is
young.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But the first five stories are all horrific crimes. I mean, of being thrown on the tracks.
Yeah.
A guy in a Mercedes. Someone comes, stops, goes talk to him. Then he gets ripped out of the car, stabbed in the arm. They try to take all his money and his Mercedes-Benz. So it's still crime, but American people are still coming here.
I'm from New York. I grew up here. I grew up here in the 80s before, and then Rudy Giuliani came in and cleaned it up. So I saw before,
squeegee
and then
guys.
I saw afterward. And I've never seen it this bad. I come up now. I've been coming up recently. I came up for the election for the first time. I've been in New York in a long time. Been coming up a few times to do shows here. It's unbelievable. And I remember the growing up, the smell of New York was always urine. It's now marijuana. It's like I'm walking up the street to my hotel today. Four people smoking marijuana on the street. I mean, it's literally you cannot walk a block in New York without the wafting smell of marijuana coming in your face or stepping over homeless people who are sleeping on the street. I mean, it's just it's funny.
And it's dirty.
Rudy cleaned up. So I remember going in the 70s and 80s going to Times Square to watch kung fu movies because that was where there was a theater that showed all Bruce Lee movies. And it was nothing but kung fu movies. Like porn stores, things like that. And then Rudy cleaned it up and turned it into Disneyland. And now it's Disneyland with a bunch of gangs and homeless people living in it.
I guess we're
it's like
it.
I mean, if they opened up the gates of Disneyland and like allowed anybody to walk in and live on the street and fight and do drugs, that's what it would be. It's just the transformation is just unbelievable.
Don't worry, help is on the way. Casinos are coming. So
excellent. Yeah, because they always bring out the best element
it does.
In America, right?
Well, let's find out. I think this might be sponsored. Big three. Let's go to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three. A Christmas gift that's even more alluring than lingerie? Naturally, nude pajamas by Pajamagram. Sensuous and soft, they look just as seductive as they feel. Get naturally nude pajamas today at Pajamagram.com.
Number three.
You know, there's some concern that if you engage in this kind of trade, deeply asymmetrical trade, does it put other Americans in harm's way in the future?
How about yes? Preet Bharara, of all people, on Meet the Press yesterday, the one who arrested Victor Boot, or she put him in jail, prosecuted him, the blowback days after the Merchant of Death was swapped for a 32-year-old center from the WNBA.
Number two.
The system is overwhelmed right now with the rescission of Title 42 authorities without being able to expel people back. It's just incredible the dereliction of this administration in putting us all at risk.
That is Ron Vitiello. What's happening right now is flat out criminal. There's a border invasion happening. Title 42 is going to expire December 12th. They're not waiting. Bill Malusian, who's been there for 2.5 years, says he's never in his life seen anything like what you saw over the weekend and what we're seeing today. They expected as bad as 18,000. He was watching 1,000 cross just in front of him into El Paso. That Democratic mayor, remember him, who was saying, okay, we got to bust these people out? Now suddenly he's gone silent.
Number one.
In looking at the Twitter files, I did look and see in Matt Taibbi's Substack where he said that there were weekly meetings between the FBI and DHS and Twitter. I certainly hope that that was part of the National Security Council approved process.
He didn't know, and he was Director of National Intelligence, John Radcliffe. Part number four of the Twitter files is unleashed. It links to intel agencies emerges and left-wing bias on COVID and Hunter are more clear. What we know now and why the media isn't bothering to even report it. And Mark, even though I prematurely said hello to you because you're such a great guy, I cannot resist. I am shocked. If you told me that four tranches of internal dialogue was released to the public, I would think there'd be calmness to say it means nothing. But I never thought there'd be zero coverage of it.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, first of all, for people who aren't watching on Fox News, I'm wearing my naturally nude pajamas right now.
That's all I can ask. No.
And I look fabulous.
Let me just say this, Mark. You're not paying attention because you put your headsets on slow. These are naturally nude pajamas for that certain someone in your life. No one wants to see Mark Thiessen in
naturally nude
pajamas.
You don't want to see me naturally nude?
Can you please not put down my great sponsors who come back every year annually?
I'm in favor of your great sponsors, and I will buy a pair for the special someone in my life.
Right.
It's incredible. I mean, it's very clear that there has been an unprecedented collusion between the FBI, the intelligence community, the Biden campaign, and social media to suppress what was a major news story. And not just that story, the Hunter Biden laptop, but conservatives in general. You know, every election I've been through so many of them because I'm so old. But you know, the every election there's an October surprise. But we've never had a situation where the FBI has been having weekly phone calls telling people watch out for the October surprise and get ready to suppress it. And here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize is that so they were warning that there would be an October surprise, there would be some sort of foreign disinformation, and it might relate to Hunter Biden, according to Yoel Roth, right? And at the time, the FBI was in possession of the laptop. So they knew it wasn't Russian disinformation. They knew it was legit. I'm sure they did the same. You know, the Catherine Herridge at CBS, our former colleague here, went and like looked at it all and a year later and got it and verified it. The Washington Post verified it long after the fact. They had it in real time. You think if CBS and the Washington Post could verify it now, they couldn't verify it at the time. So they knew it wasn't Russian disinformation, and yet they were warning Twitter to suppress it as Russian disinformation.
So you realize it all relates to what was the FBI up to with the phony Rush investigation,
yeah,
and the Durham report, and then the Trump presidency, from the Trump candidacy to the Trump presidency, and then different people, different names. What are they doing? Now, I want to see these whistleblowers front and center, the old-fashioned FBI guys, where you didn't know if they were right or left. And, you know, you probably don't even care. I never think politics when it comes to the FBI. I will never not think politics
exactly from
here on in. So just picture this. The director of national intelligence is getting this information for the first time thanks to Elon Musk. Listen to what he was saying. Cut six.
The Office of the Director of National Intelligence would have only been authorized to participate in Trump National Security Council approved and coordinated process for election security briefings to groups of private companies. So it would include companies like Twitter, but many other companies, YouTube, Microsoft, as well as state election officials to talk about threats. None of those meetings, but Maria, would have had anything to do with content moderation, much less anything to do with specifically about the Biden laptop as Russian disinformation. So there never would have been any authority or reason for anyone within the intelligence community to be saying anything otherwise. You know, I think that's pretty clearly stated.
He was sitting there going, this was happening. Now, the question is, Christopher Wray, could he actually, if I was to interview Christopher Wray, could he say the same thing? Like, I did not authorize this.
It's possible. I mean, think about this.
See, the king of England?
So Yoel Roth, not in the Twitter files, but in a filing to a sworn statement to the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, because the RNC actually filed a complaint against Twitter about this, about the suppression of the laptop. And he said he was having weekly meetings, not just with the FBI, but the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. John Ratcliffe is the head of that office. Did he know that his people were having weekly meetings?
He seems to be saying no.
So, I mean, maybe Chris Wray didn't know about this either. Maybe this is something that's happening below that level, which you would think when you're dealing with something as sensitive as information relating to a presidential campaign, it would have to be approved at the highest level. And the other thing that, you know, we need to get to the bottom of this letter from the 51 intelligence officials, former intelligence officials.
In fact,
I've been a part of letters like this.
I didn't know 43 were CIA.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Usually these letters get generated by somebody. There's a first mover who takes pen, puts it to paper, and then it gets circulated by somebody to all these people and they decide to sign it or not.
My hunch is Brennan or Clapper.
Yeah, maybe. But was it also at the usually an intelligence official? These people have contacts back at the agency. They wouldn't sign something like this if they didn't go back to people inside the agency and ask, "Do you think this is true? What is your thoughts on this?" So we need to get all 51 of those people need to be called up to testify in Congress and explain. We need to get to the bottom of who generated that letter. Did someone in the intel community suggest it to Brennan and Clapper? How did it get generated? Who sent it around? Who circulated? Who wrote it? There's so much information that we need to get to the bottom of. This is a scandal of unmitigated proportion.
So the front page of the New York Post today, and so Kevin McCarthy was on me Saturday night on One Nation. And he was the one – that was the show where he said what his intent was, which is going to really please you, Mark Thiessen. Let's listen.
Those 51 intel agents that signed a letter that said the Hunter Biden information was all wrong, was Russia collusion, many of them have a security clearance. We're going to bring them before committee. I'm going to have them have a hearing. Bring them and subpoena them before committee. Why did they sign it? Why did they lie to the American public? A Clapper, a Brennan. Why did you use the reputation that America was able to give to you, more information, but use it for a political purpose and lie to the American public? It's exactly what Adam Schiff has done to us, and this has got to stop.
He's 100% right. And also, every one of those people should be asked, do you disavow the letter now? In hindsight, knowing what you know today, because David Priest was on with Brett Baier a few months ago.
We should bring that back.
And he refused to. He said, I didn't do anything wrong.
No, you know what he said?
What?
He said, it looks like Russian information. I didn't say it was. It looks like this
if
is what they're
doing. If we're not smart enough to understand what he meant by that, then that's not his fault. He's not responsible for us being stupid.
I know you've played this out in your head. Go back to the debate.
Oh, yeah.
So when this makes big news, it's time for Donald Trump. We now tested – he probably had COVID at the time. Mm-hmm. So he clearly was the worst debate ever. Mm-hmm. He has this moment where he waits for the Hunter Biden laptop stuff to come up. And immediately Joe Biden, we know, is lying.
Yep.
He said 51 intel officials came out and said all this. So they used it. It was brought up by Chris Wallace, brings it up as moderator, backed up by Joe Biden. And then Donald Trump was sitting there and they moved on to another topic.
Yeah. So – not only did they not call into question what Joe Biden was saying about this being Russian disinformation. CNN actually, their fact checkers actually questioned whether did Donald Trump bring up Russian disinformation in the debate. So they actually
know that
they not only did they not question what Joe Biden was saying, just took it as fact. But this is why, you know, there was a poll that came out recently, Gallup poll, I think it was, showed that 80% of Americans believe that the media is a threat to democracy. In fact, according to this poll, more Americans think the media, the corporate media, is a threat to democracy than think Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. This is an institution that has been absolutely decimated in its credibility. And why has it been decimated? Because of the Russia collusion conspiracy theory that they pushed for so long, which ended up not being true, which the Hunter Biden laptop story, which they suppressed and told us was Russian information, turned out not to be true. No institution has done more damage to its own credibility and destroyed itself. And this is why, when Donald Trump comes out after the election and says the election was stolen, even it wasn't stolen, and we know that now. And even Trump judges said it wasn't stolen. The person you would turn to normally would be the objective source, would be the media, to say what are the facts, true or not true. And when they said it wasn't true, nobody believed them because they're like the boy who cried wolf. At some point, you know, when you're finally telling the truth about something, no one believes you.
I know.
It's very bad for our democracy to not have a neutral arbiter of truth that people can trust.
Well, I mean, I remember when Joe Rogan is bringing up to people, you know, the laptop is real. What do you mean? Like Rob Reiner didn't even know. Like some of these people don't even know that this stuff has been the New York Times, Washington Post, their trusted sources, CBS, have come out and said it's real. So a lot of these celebrities, people are just reading in their lane, don't even think that I'm going to ignore this for agenda. They don't even think that they might be off.
Well, they don't even know it's happening a lot of the time if they're not paying attention to us.
Right.
Because so think about this. If you're a conservative in the world, right, and you're watching Fox News and like that, you still can't get away from liberal opinion because it's everywhere. It's in TV. It's in TV shows like that. And even if you're trying to read me like that, you can't get away. If you're a liberal and you want to live in a silo, you can, because we don't own the culture the same way, right?
Absolutely.
So they can literally – there are people in this country who do not see the images that Bill Melugin is showing us now about what's happening on the border, who do not know that the border crisis is what it is. They don't know about the Hunter Biden laptop story. They don't think this stuff is important because they're not even aware it's happening.
But I am aware of a break. When we come back, that Bill Priest guy that was on with Brett, we're going to bring back that sound to expand on what you said.
Excellent.
Are you just saying that or you mean it?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The purpose of the letter is to have an effect. And the nuance that you're talking about here never made it to candidate Biden because he said it plainly on a debate stage that obviously affected the dynamic. Man, don't you think?
I would absolutely love for all news media to show nuance on all of these issues instead of racing to sound bites. And in this case, some news media raced to sound bites. That's not helpful for the American people. And
you
I really
think
wish
your
that
letter
people.
Was helpful for the American people?
Well, instead of quoting one sentence from it, if people actually read maybe an entire paragraph, it shows
in
that we don't know if
don't
it's Russian.
It affected anything?
I don't know if it affected anything.
But
we don't analyze American political environments.
So that was Bill Priest, and he was one of the people that signed off, the 51 intel experts that said this is classic Russian disinformation. He's trying to defend himself, Mark Deason.
Well, and we didn't get to the point where he said if you're not smart enough to be able to tell the difference between is and could, then it's not my fault.
This could be Russian disinformation. He didn't say it didn't.
You know, it's
and who financed? Who bought the ad?
Yeah. No, exactly right. I mean, we need to get to the bottom of this. These people, the fascinating thing is they were claiming that they were trying to stop Russian disinformation from affecting the election. But instead, they spread American disinformation claiming Russian disinformation, which may have affected the election.
Here's an example, Mark. Can you imagine if word got out when Bush against Gore that there was the DWI was going to emerge and the president got a DWI? Was he in college? Right after college. It provided maybe the point or two difference that made this thing be a runoff that almost cost the president's presidency. But that was the October surprise.
Yeah.
In the last few weeks that President George W. Bush had a DWI.
So and
what if the FBI got a hold of that and suppressed it, and they said sorry about that because we don't want Al Gore to win?
Or do you remember the October surprise about Bush and the National Guard? Dan Rather that turned out to be written in a font that didn't exist back then, right? It was clearly –
who still swears he was right.
Yeah.
He was right.
It wasn't. It was a lie. And, you know, no one suppressed that. And that was disinformation. That was someone came up with an October surprise that was absolutely fabricated. CBS News went with it, reported it, almost affected the outcome of the election. Here you have the opposite happening, where our intelligence and law enforcement officials were engaged in – again, the FBI had the laptop. They had the laptop. They knew it wasn't Russian disinformation. I can't believe they didn't do forensics on it.
But and what about the fact that he's going to come out aggressively against Bob Alinsky and others? He said defamed him. That's one of the things that Hunter Biden might be doing.
Unbelievable.
It's incredible. Mark, what are you going to do now?
I'm going to go home.
That's allowed.
Yeah.
Mark Thiessen gave us all some quality time. Brett Baer next. You like Brett, right?
I love Brett.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
As a native Arizonan who was born and raised near the southern border, I can tell you unequivocally that the federal government has failed its duty in the last 40 years.
Not just Democrats.
It's just everyone. The federal government has failed here.
Kyrsten Sinema. Yeah, the federal government has failed, but he says failed for 20 years. And I think that's disingenuous because one thing about President Trump, he fired a lot of people in order to get to the right person. He had the right policies in place. A lot of people didn't like him, but you cannot say it was not effective, unlike this. And we know Senator Sinema made news because she went independent on Thursday or Friday of last week. Brett Baer joins us now, chief political anchor of Fox News, getting set to host his show. Hey, Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
So anytime a Democrat comes out outside Henry Cuellar and says the border is being ignored by the Democratic Party, it's noteworthy. But she did couch it by saying for 20 years both parties use it for politics. Where is she heading with this move in her career, do you think?
Well, I think she sees an uphill battle as a Democrat in Arizona and wants to kind of up her independent bona fides to maybe attract Republicans, which is possible. However, I think she's going to face a challenge on the left in Arizona. She's up next cycle, and potentially that is not a great thing for Democrats in a cycle that's already going to be upside down for them on the seats that they're defending. I think she has the backing of a number of Republicans on a number of different issues. And she's talked extensively with Mitch McConnell. So, you know, potentially you get one more going independent and you have a change of the Senate.
In what way? That if they keep saying we're going to caucus with Democrats?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they wouldn't have to caucus with Democrats. Yeah. I mean, if they made a deal and then they have the decision, you know, who's the which way the ball is bouncing. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just saying that. Or that close, and it makes a difference.
So here's Ro Khanna on, and the reason why we bring this up, it's just these horrific scenes of these thousands of people that when Bill Malusian is stunned by the number of people coming to the border after 2.5 years being camped there in El Paso, he says there was 1,000 people walked up today, and it was bigger than anything he's ever seen in one day, in such a short period of time. This is a emergency with December 12th looming next week. That's when Title 42 evaporates. Here's Ro Khanna on this. Cut 15.
I think he should go, and I expect he will go. But the more important thing is, how do we solve this issue? We can start with some basic principles. A nation needs borders. Those borders should be secure. At the same time, we need some orderly process for immigration. We need to be able to recognize asylum claims. That's based on our fundamental values as a country, but we also need to have a process where people can come here without having to cross the border if they want to work here in an orderly process.
And right, right. So he's talking about the easy stuff that everyone agrees on, to make work permits maybe easier, to maybe adjust the criteria. But now you have two Democrats admitting the border is not secure. Matt Kelly did it during the election. Now that we're out of the election cycle, will this help more Democrats or stop more Democrats from coming forward to see what we all see?
Well, I think it has to help, especially in those border states, and it's impossible to ignore. But it's not just the border states that we've talked about many times, in that these folks are going to a lot of different states, and more importantly, that the enforcement of fentanyl coming across the border is affecting every state. I mean, you look at a place like New Hampshire, it's seeing exponential fentanyl deaths, as is Ohio and the Midwest and other places. So, you know, it's not just the actual people, it's also the drugs and the cartels moving across that border. And whether you're a Democrat or Republican or
right
alien, you understand that it's a problem.
So, Brett, we know December 12th is coming, and we know now the administration is going to ask for $3 billion to build more tents and more facilities for illegals. I mean, I don't even know what they're talking about, security, but in theory, hire more Border Patrol, but you can't get any people to take that job in great numbers anymore. So now they're going to color Republicans as playing politics if they don't sign off on it. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think, you know, it's a long time coming as far as what we've seen. So Republicans have been talking about it forever. And I think Democrats are late to the game, but they are going to put the pressure on them because we're up against another fiscal cliff, you know, the funding of the government, let alone the end of Title 42. So I think it's a combination of all those things, and Republicans will probably sign off on it.
On $3 billion just to build more tents? I hope they don't. They got to get something for this. Like, for example, commitment to
for it. Somebody will get something for it, but it's I guarantee you that when push comes to shove, $3 billion in the big picture is going to probably happen to help those states along the border.
But if you, but I want to see you help those states, but if you don't build any barrier and if you don't do any change in the consulates in these countries of origin, nothing's gonna change except for Catholic Charities is going to get richer.
Exactly. It's a maddening long-term problem that there has to be a solution for. You could get on the back of an envelope, and Democrats and Republicans could work together. But both sides, to Sinema's point, have used it when it came to election time. I think Democrats more than Republicans on, you know, in the past about saying that that Republicans were somehow cold-hearted to the situation. But we're past all of that. The kids that are being kept on the border there are more of them now than there were when all the Democrats were on the border talking about that.
So, Brett Baer, our guest, obviously. Brett, the prisoner swap is not going away. Everyone's glad anytime an American comes home, but on what price? It looks like the Trump administration walked away from a Paul Whelan for the Victor Boot exchange because it wasn't equal, let alone a center in the WNBA. So Preet Bharara, who put him behind bars, obviously a Democrat and an anti-Trumper, said this yesterday. He's trying to pretend as if this isn't the worst deal ever. Cut 18.
At the same time, you might imagine that not as just a general prosecutor, but the prosecutor who oversaw the prosecution and conviction of Victor Boot has a view about how dangerous a person he was. He's, as you said, someone who was convicted at trial by unanimous jury of conspiracy to kill Americans. He was convicted of conspiracy to provide material support to terrorists. He's on tape with confidential informants, planning to sell hundreds of surface-to-air missiles to the FARC, also sell 30,000 AK-47s to the FARC for the stated purpose of shooting down American helicopters in Colombia. So he's a dangerous man then. I don't know how dangerous he is now.
At 55, the contacts are still there. He looks in perfect health. So he's trying to be measured. You know, if it was Trump that did it, he wouldn't even be measured. But having said that, upon further review, I'm not sure how good this deal looks. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think so, just on its face. Obviously, you have to have the caveat.
Well, I'm not for it, but go ahead.
Yeah, anytime an American comes home, that's a great thing. But as far as a deal goes, it's just not a strong deal, considering that not only Paul Whelan, but Mark Fogel is still there under similar circumstances as Brittany Griner, not in a different category of classification of being held. And, you know, why in either administration wasn't this a priority? If you're going to do that big of a deal, that you get more than one person. I think it was a lot of, you know, there's all kinds of people are talking about why it happened. The NSC and John Kirby are saying it was either this or nothing. But it also was high profile, and the White House has talked a lot about the personality in Brittany Griner.
I also think there was a huge interview over the weekend with Jamie Dimon, who's, man, is he politically savvy. He knows the politics. He knows energy. He obviously knows money at J.P. Morgan. Chase, I would think that this guy, if he was younger and had the inclination, he would be a great candidate for either party. He says in his heart he's a Democrat, but in his head he's a Republican. But having said that, this is what he was talking about when it comes to energy. Cut 29.
Carbon emissions are going up because nations rich and poor around the world are turning back on their coal plants. Mm-hmm. They cannot afford expensive energy, and they can't afford no energy. So, you know, to me, to solve climate, we kind of need all the above, permitting, plans. Gas is the best and cleanest way to reduce coal, which is mm-hmm. the best way to reduce CO2. So, you know, really thoughtful policy, comprehensive policy will get us there. But it also is military policy, economic policy, including trade. So when I say economic, I'm talking about, you know, trade is one thing, but economic is investment rights. So anything that relates to national security will have to be changed.
And he talked about the Inflation Reduction Act alienating Europe. And most people say, well, who cares? America first. But Europe has a say in this, too. If they do a European Inflation Reduction Act, which is probably falsely named as much as ours is, and it's all Europe, that will hurt us, as if people still got to think long term in terms of how the ripple effect of what we do, let alone the domestic effect. I just thought the interview just removed politics and went to practicality, especially as it comes to energy.
Yeah, I think that he has talked about that numerous times up on Capitol Hill and elsewhere. It's a good grasp of it. He talks to all of the energy folks on all sides, green energy, as well as Chevron, Exxon, all of those folks. And, you know, it's not good versus evil. It's kind of put in a way of yeah. We can get to cleaner energy, but we have to get there over time with everything, all of the above. You know, in the long run, scientists will tell you that we likely are going to find something that is the next energy source, whether it's fusion or something else, but it can't happen tomorrow. And it hurts us if we think it can or force it to.
It's like when you lose the free market principles involved in things of national security, whether it's pharmaceuticals, you have to make biotech lucrative. You have to. Because it's got to be a way to get the greatest minds with the most financially resourced people together in order to pioneer something new. And if your goal of beating polio or smallpox, if you get rich doing that, I am more than happy because of the lives you saved. And what they're trying to do, and maybe in a honest way, is they're taking the financial incentive out of these things and they're stopping innovation when it comes to energy if it's not all green. And I just wish there was someone who could remove the politics and bring back free market principles in this and not have either party gain from it and just have the American people.
Yeah, well, I think it has hurt the Democratic Party in some of these purple states trying to defend some of these actions. And you didn't see it in this midterm, I think, for a number of other reasons, other factors.
Abortion.
But I think long term, it will be a hurt if they have to defend these actions that don't seem practical, as Jamie Dimon is talking about.
Brett, have you thought about a panel tonight, or do you want to just end with more of a band instead of the and have more musical end to Special Report?
You know, when I sat on Fox and Friends, there was the marching band
yes.
that came in. I thought that was a possibility on a
right.
Monday.
I mean, do you want to meet with your producers and maybe there's too much emphasis on insight and information in the last
That's
block
true.
And
yeah,
need
yeah,
more musical?
Lighter. I mean, look, I'm tossing to Jesse, so
right.
I mean, it should be a little lighter. No, I've got Britt Hume tonight. That's going to be good. I've also got this segment we do every week called Common Ground, where we bring left and right together, and we're going to see if we can find some tonight.
All right, good. And Brett, I just had your impression that nobody's covering the Twitter revelations.
Oh my gosh, it's insane! It's really insane. Think about the opposite, which we always have to do in the prism of if this thing was from a different perspective. It's just remarkable. And eventually, they're going to have to cover it. Otherwise, they're going to look stupid.
Right. Well, it took 2.5 years to admit the Hunter Biden laptop is real. Soon, they're going to realize Elon Musk is a real person. And these communications in Slack The Slack emails are actually authentic. We'll see. We'll see what we're doing in 2.5 years. Brett, thanks so much.
We'll see, Brett.
All right. When we come back, it's all you. 1-866-408-7669. Or you go to BrianKilmeade.com, just click on comments, and then I'll get it. Read it.
Honest commentary, unique opinions, no agenda. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
But in actuality, his weapons might have been used to kill Americans. He has not killed Americans. I'm not saying he's not a nasty, bad guy. But I will tell you that I believe that Americans should know that the sovereignty of their nation will always be behind them.
Unbelievable. That is Sheila Jackson Lee commenting on the swap, prisoner swap. Brittany Griner, 32 years old. I think she might even be innocent of even what she's been charged with. I believe they never should have been held up like this. Held for 9 months in Russia. This guy was arrested in a very sophisticated takedown, and he is known as the merchant of death. There's no way this swap is equal. We always judge human life, care about human life more than Iran, Russia, North Korea, our common opponents, China. But this was not a swap that's going to do anything but make other celebrities be susceptible. I'm telling you right now, if you are in Russia and you're a teacher or exchange student, you got to get out. Because you'll be able to, somebody else will find something in your suitcase or in your apartment, and you might be 100% innocent, but you're going to be stuck behind enemy lines. And they're going to make your life miserable until word gets out how you're being treated and the American people put so much pressure, the Russians will get another valuable asset out. They were all working on this other guy. I was trying to kill somebody in Germany, and they're trying to get the U.S. to pressure Germany to release this guy in exchange for Paul Whelan. I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I don't have a roster of everybody that we have. We put people through trial. We don't make stuff up. Paul Whelan's not a spy. He's a Marine who was visiting a friend in Russia who had this thing called a wedding. So he went there, and he gets caught, and he gets stayed, and he's still there. And he's evidently in hell because it is freezing. He's working outdoors, and every day is a challenge. And they like when he calls and pleads his case. Fiona Hill, not a fan of Trump, obviously, but testified against him in the impeachment, but worked under John Bolton. Cut 20.
Well, look, at the particular time, I also have to say here that President Trump wasn't especially interested in engaging in that swap also Paul Whelan. He was not particularly interested in Paul's case in the way that one would have thought he would be. Ambassador Bolton met with Elizabeth Whelan, Paul's sister. I was at that meeting as well. There was a lot of attention being paid to this and trying to find ways of arranging Paul's release by all different parts of the U.S. government.
All right, so she goes, I'll say something, but I want you to hear the rest of her comment. Cut 21.
But of course, there was a big debate about Viktor Boot himself. I mean, as we see now as well, the absurdity of the Russians asking for the release of a notorious arms dealer, as well as somebody who'd been convicted of large-scale narcotics smuggling, in return for American citizens who had been either set up, in the case of Paul Whelan, and later imprisoned, in the case of Trevor Reed and Brittany Griner, for very minor infractions that would have been handled differently in different cases.
So obviously the folly of it, and she doesn't want to make Trump look good or the administration look good ever. She likes John Bolton. John Bolton likes her. And he's saying the fact that they turned down a Whelan for Viktor Boot because Viktor Boot is everything that she just described. So that's why I think it's important for me to bring non-political people into play. Nothing against Brittany Griner. I feel terrible for her. Another thing is people talk about it's time for youth, it's time for women's sports to get more money. Why does she have to go to Russia and get paid three times what she does for – in a short period of time than she does in WNBA. I don't know. It's the marketplace that rules. More people are interested in men's basketball. Ask LeBron James to split his salary with Brittany Griner. See how that goes. That's just where it is. I think women's tennis at one point was more popular than men's tennis. They got more where they should have.
Mm-hmm.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.